Yes, it's Andy's Girls. Happy 4th of July to everyone celebrating. Not intended to be a joke, although if you know my personal history with the 4th of July, it is a day for crying in despair. So I'll get to that a little bit later on in the episode. Oh, life, am I right? But in the meantime, I'm literally recording this Wednesday night. I made the terrible decision to take a nap, which is one of my worst, one of my least favorite things to do on the planet is to take a nap. I'm vehemently anti-nap. Earmuffs if you're Dorinda Medley. I don't want to spend an hour between 4 and 5 putting on some sort of cotton schmata, getting into bed and feeling rested. I just don't, because I don't know how. No one ever taught me the technology involved in napping. So I just took, I guess, a nap, but it was 3 hours long, which I think that's essentially just going to sleep earlier and then waking up. Like I guess that's also how you define a nap, but I don't think I'm successful at this. It happens very infrequently. And every time I wake up so disoriented. And so I took that disorientation. I thought to myself, it's time to watch NJ because I am one of those odd nightmare people who I don't know if it's franchise specific or mood specific, but I don't necessarily feel the immediate urge to watch a Housewives ep even the day after it's aired. And there's something about New Jersey this season where I kind of know what to expect. I mean, spoiler alert, I don't think Teresa and Melissa are going to be getting along. And then there's Danielle and Jen. So I didn't necessarily feel the rush to watch. Speaking of rushes, I have still to this point, I've only watched the premiere episode of Orange County, was the COVID season 15. So I do now have 7 days to watch it. I made a blood oath with myself that I was going to watch and discuss 15 before, 37 comes out. So that's still coming. Still got to do it and recap those episodes. But back to NJ, there was something about maybe being like a little bit groggy, kind of out of it, that bonded me closer to the newest episode of New Jersey. I don't think it was a bad episode. What a weird place I find myself in with NJ that I feel like I have to clarify when talking about each episode as it airs. You know, it wasn't terrible. And sometimes they're good. You know, last week's episode, the week including the altercation, I thought was like really layered and had a lot. And this week, I found it to be, in the words of Connor Roy, may his memory be a blessing, a curio where I was like, huh, stuff's happening. I'm here for stuff happening. I'm here for technically things happening. I technically took what I'm calling a nap. And New Jersey didn't feel entirely like it had fallen asleep. Like there was still stuff to discuss. I don't know why this occurred to me. Truly do not know. But I'm watching the newest episode of New Jersey for the first time, and I'm thinking to myself, is this what Beverly Hills would have been like if Lisa Vanderpump hadn't quit? Like this idea of these entirely two separate universes, and you have to decide with whom you're paying the toll. Like you're going here or you're going there. And if you try to straddle, which at this point, I think genuinely only Jen Fessler is attempting to do relatively unsuccessfully, but like honestly, to a certain extent, like who could be successful? They're going to try to light you on fire. Like nobody's really going to be happy. They're just going to show their happiness in different ways. But I do actually think that while I'm so sad that Lisa left, and while I do actually think that there's stuff that we could have explored when it came to Lisa and Kyle's tension, that's really a hope or a wish that I would have liked that probably wouldn't have been shown, because neither camp, neither party would have had any interest in participating in it. It's like you don't want to meet in the middle of the field, even though everybody's supposed to be playing ball. Look at me, an athlete. It's the idea sometimes with some of these fights and some of these conflicts. Think of Bethany and Carol. I mean, I still, with every fiber of my being, think it was a bad move to have fired Carol right when things were at a fever pitch with Carol and Bethany. Because I think this season that followed would have been fascinating. That might have been an easier season to accomplish for probably everyone but Carol, because I don't think the cast of OG New York was split so heavily into two different camps. I think that it was more of a genuine ensemble point back then. And I guess technically with the new cast, but who cares? I really think that that was a genuine missed opportunity and one of those moments where it felt like someone in this show has a little bit too much power. I also think of it with Nene and Claudia Jordan. Claudia Jordan, to me, is one of those one and dones who should never have been one and done. She was doing too much that to me, it didn't make sense that she wasn't brought back. And while I don't want to like blame Nene for this, and I guess you could argue the same about Bethany, it felt like there was a favorite in the cast who just had a little too much possible authority or opinion or perspective, which maybe production didn't want to necessarily mess with, of like, is this person not going to want to participate if their arch nemesis stays? Now, I don't want to give Claudia too much credit, although I absolutely believe she should have been back for another season. I don't want to blame this entirely on her conflict with Nene. With Bethany and Carol, I can't help but see there being some sort of decision made because of how hot things had gotten with Bethany and Carol. With LVP and Kyle, I don't know what it is. There's just something about New Jersey where it makes you think of the like, what could have been moments where you think, listen, these people are like such high conflict. Why not have this continue a little bit and see where it lands, especially if it's not all against one? And all against one is not what's going on in New Jersey right now. Like, there are two seemingly pretty separate camps. It's not stacking the deck entirely on one person. You could argue LVP was going that way, where she was like entirely isolated and siloed. And I understand why she wouldn't necessarily want to come back. It is a little bit like deflating the balloon, I guess, at Bougie Kids. Why not? When you think of, if you're the kind of person like me who lives in a period of regret, who does often think of the like woulda, coulda, shouldas of, oh, if only this person hadn't left, imagine what we would have seen next. And maybe that's owing to like a divorce that was announced or some sort of business failing flop or some other kind of like personal newsworthy crisis or something that happens after a Bravoholic typically is fired, but in LVP's case, like genuinely quits. I just think with LVP, I'm like, it's not about what was happening in the media because there was nothing going on. It's just about what was happening on the show that like there's a part of me that thinks, oh, if they had continued, we could have figured something out. And maybe that is a little bit of an extra dream scenario because I'm watching New Jersey right now and I'm like, maybe this is a little bit of a lesson, not just to other Bravo Lebs of literally play ball, but also to Bravo viewers of be careful what you wish for. If there are seasons that feel slightly unfulfilled or a storyline with conflict between people that you want to see come to some sort of conclusion or in continued fruition, sometimes you get more content, but the content is just 16 episodes of a stalemate plus. And so I'm watching the newest episode, and I don't know why LVP came to mind, truly. Maybe it's because I do think of her now and again, and I'm like, oh, it would be kind of incredible if she came back to Beverly Hills, but I don't know that that is possible. She has reiterated many times that it's not. But I also started to think, imagine being a friend of on New Jersey this season, because the show keeps trying to convince us that friends of not named Jackie exist. And there's some lady named Tiffany, I think, and another lady whose name I forget, who the show keeps utilizing with like lower thirds. This is so-and-so. So-and-so is married to so-and-so. So-and-so is somebody's friend. And I'm just thinking to myself, not this season. I don't even know why they're trying it. This is a cameo situation. This is not even a cameo plus. These people are like absolutely in the background. Maybe they're in a literal friend circle when it comes to like filming at Bougie Kids, where they're standing next to people who are speaking who the cameras are focused on. But I could not tell you anything about either of these people. I don't know that we've been introduced to their families. I think we've met husbands or boyfriends. No, I think husbands for both of these ladies. I'm sure they're wonderful people because I don't give a shit. It's just kind of odd to me that there is this little edit, because what is that leading up to? Are they at the finale? I feel like we're all talking around, talking in circles of like something's going to happen. And we saw something that did happen last week at Teresa's Tulum soiree. And I know we're building up to this like wild goddamn finale situation. Are editors trying to convince us that these two friends are integral to the cast because they're a part of the finale chaos? Otherwise, I don't understand it. It feels like the show is trying to dangle the carrot of like, there's other people here for us to maybe, you know, do something with or whatever. They're technically here. Look, it's not just Teresa, Marge, or Melissa somewhere in there, Jen, Danielle. There's also some other people. We're trying our best. And it just, I don't know what the payoff is. The only thing I can think of is that there's some sort of payoff with these women at the finale, which I would argue isn't really a payoff. I would just think, imagine if we're like watching a season where the christening episode happens, not at the beginning of the season, but like at the absolute end. And somebody's like throwing pasta to somebody else in the crowd. Does that make them a friend of, or does that just make someone who like doesn't love carbs? You know, like, I mean, rule number one is hold on to the penne with your life. What is it? Leave the gun, take the cannoli, or take the cannoli, leave the gun. Whatever it is, when we talk about christening fights, do not blame the pasta. Unlike on Vanderpump Rules, I do not entirely understand the editing decision that's taking place. And at a certain point, I'm kind of pulling stuff out of my ass with why these women continue to be introduced to us as like someone to focus on when I don't know a goddamn thing about them. Maybe at some point at the beginning of the season, when the beginning of whatever goddamn season we're in aired 1300 months ago, we were told more about them. I've forgotten, but they keep reminding me that these people have names, and I love that for them. I love that journey for these two women, that they both have first names and are somebody's spouse and somebody's friend, but you're not giving me anything that I need, so I don't know why this is being so fully pushed. And also, speaking of pushed, word on the street is that there's a little rumor mill that this thing, this idea that's been speculated about on prior AG episodes and certainly online, is maybe actually happening. And if there's not a more confident phrase than maybe actually, I don't know what to tell you, that instead of having a reunion episode, it's not funny. Why am I laughing? That instead of having a reunion episode, the show is going to bring both camps, I guess, to film separately at Rails Restaurant, the scene of the finale crime, to talk about the finale episode, which to me is giving the people's couch. We've just moved the couch to Franklin Lakes. It's better than nothing, although I don't think the bar should be the reunion or literally nothing, but it feels like we're leaning more toward the nothing era, which doesn't entirely make sense to me. Now, Andy, speaking on behalf of himself, obviously, but also the show, has said things will make sense when you watch the finale episode. There's going to be so much that's answered at the finale that would cover questions asked at the reunion, that you have things covered, which I get. That might be entirely right. He might also be like hyping the finale as you would expect, but also he might be spot on that like there's stuff that happens that escalates to the point that I don't know if it stops conversation or it just makes the future seem entirely impossible with these people being in a room again. But if you feel like there are questions that have been answered at the finale, I don't know why we're making another finale. And now we're making a finale that's like more of an after show, but the after show for New Jersey doesn't exist. They're doing a thing now on Bravo's YouTube that is not called the after show, where it's like a 5-minute thing of like, most recently the cast did because I watched this after I watched the episode. The cast did answer some questions about the most recent episode. But aside from that, it's like random clip packages of like, here's what my life is like as a human person in the Garden State. It's not reflecting on specific episodes weekly as the after show typically has. So now you're giving us, I guess, an after show episode that is a full episode. I don't know if it's going to be a special split between camps. They get 22 minutes plus commercials. You get 22 minutes. Or we're trying to stretch this out. This does answer, I assume, concerns from the cast that they're not going to get paid because they're missing up to probably three episodes of content that will no longer exist. This would cover at least one episode. But also, who's driving the goddamn train here? Is this just going to be people talking on the couch trying to spin? We saw spin this episode. What Jen is attempting to say happened during the altercation, Danielle's response to it. Are we just going to have people denying the reality of what's going on TV or just explaining away their behavior? Are they just going to monologue? I mean, welcome to Andy's Girls. You know, come on over to my house. If that's going to happen, okay, but is there not someone asking the questions? Why not just have Andy sit down with each camp where at least you get likely pointed questions being made? Now it feels like you've just, you know, made the animals in charge of the zoo or something where it's like the cast isn't getting to dictate, I assume, what the edit will be because they're just... Someone has to be asking them questions, as happens on the after show. But I don't get the instinctive feeling that this is really going to come with pushback. I think what we need this season, at the end of the season, is pushback. If the cast is unwilling or unable to sit in the same room together, why are we taking out the counter and the pushback from this dynamic? I don't know. The way that it has been described online could be entirely inaccurate, but it sounds like a People's Couch style episode where I think the voice of the producer is more to kind of connect these dots than intentionally add intention with asking questions that the cast does not want to answer. I don't know if they're doing that because production itself doesn't want to address a lot of the stuff that's been rumored and speculated about online, but does that really mean it shouldn't be mentioned at all? Like, shouldn't a cast member, if you're being accused of like doing some crazy shit on social, shouldn't you have the opportunity to deny that if it's untrue, or rather if it is true but you still want to like lie about it? Shouldn't you get that opportunity? Shouldn't you be put under the microscope? Like, since when do we decide that this is kind of too hot to discuss, but also we're still creating new content? I don't totally get it. If you take out what Andy said about, you know, the finale answers all the questions, yada, yada, I don't totally understand why you would then try to create a like lesser than accompaniment to the finale episode, which it sounds like this is. Unless maybe there's a producer there really trying to push back on some stuff, but it doesn't feel like that's the purpose of this. It just feels like it's the cast sitting down at a, I assume, smaller table and kind of figuring it out. Maybe the fun, quote unquote, will be in trying to decide and then react to who's sitting with whom. Like Jen Fessler, is she going to be with Teresa and Jen? I would have assumed yes, because things are weird with Rachel, and on TV they're weird with Marge, even though they've both said, I think, after the fact that they're fine in real life. I would have thought that Fessler would have been with Tree and Jen, but then Fessler goes on Watch What Happens. Was it Watch What Happens? I think it was Watch What Happens, and says, you know, when it comes to like Louie and the phone call, trigger warning, I believe that Louie made that call. Like, I've been given evidence. I now believe that that happened and he was the one to do it. I don't see how you can say that and sit at the same table as Teresa. She's going to have a lot of thoughts and feels on it. I don't think you're going to be able to be involved in like friendly conversation. So I don't know what you do with Jen. Maybe she's like, I don't know, with the maitre d' or something. Like, maybe we have a side table there. Jackie, I assume, absolutely would be with Teresa and Jen, regardless of what's being said about her on the show at this point. I think Jackie's way of probably processing this is to say, like, okay, maybe nobody was really had pure intentions and in wanting to be friends with me at this moment, but I saw through, or I expected more from Marge and I guess Melissa, even though I really do think this is more about Marge than Melissa when it comes to all things Jackie at this point. And I would assume her reaction to what Teresa and Jen have said so vocally and specifically on recent episodes of, like, we're just friends with her to get intel and info. I would assume that Jackie's response would be something along the lines of, like, yes, but now we're close. Like, regardless of how possibly manufactured this was, or really more than that strategic the beginning of this relationship, friendship was, now we're close. So I assume that she would be sitting with Jen and Tree, and then I guess everybody else at another larger table. What do you do with Dolo? Maybe Dolo gets paid double. God bless. She deserves it. Let's give her more money so she doesn't have to do that goddamn electrical company. What is the deal with the electrical company? Her saying on this episode that she accepted the offer to help run Paul's electrical company. First off, is it Paul's electrical? Why am I saying electrical company over and over again? That feels wrong. I don't know why. It just feels instinctively. My body is like repelling. against the idea of talking about an electrical company for an hour. But why did Dolo accept the offer? Why is it being called Paul's company? Was the whole thing that she was going to be a partner? Is that not really what's happening? I can't get into another kind of storyline, although I guess any storyline that I might say, I can't get into it. Well, lucky for me, I guess the show's so fractured that it's not like, I guess we should just kind of hold on to what we've got right now because we're probably not going to get it again. So great on discussing the electrical company. Is Dolo a partner or an employee? Is she like a partner or a manager? I didn't love, maybe I'm just too focused on the words like Paul's company, as Dolo said it, but I didn't love that. I also just don't love the idea. I feel like he's making it harder for her to leave their relationship versus doing the thing she wants him to do to keep her there. Does that make sense? It just feels like he's making her exit because she's told him specifically what she wants or she will seemingly walk. She's told the cast most recently something different of like, I'm fine, everything's okay. But we know based on what she has said to Paul, based on her pattern of relationships, that she wants a commitment and she wants to be married for Dolo. She wants the commitment in terms of a ring. And then you better goddamn believe that she wants a marriage to happen. Paul previously said he bought a ring. Was he joking about that or did he actually buy an engagement ring? What is happening? Why isn't he proposing to her and then figuring out the divorce? If the divorce is being more protracted and it's not a question of I don't want this to happen, but like the legalities of it are just too complicated because I have a lot of money, resources, maybe he worked with his ex-wife or separate, you know, estranged wife, whatever. Maybe that is just really, really intense and hard to separate. So it's taking literal years and he probably didn't get a real move on it until he and Dolo got serious. That's entirely possible. But also, what if it's not? I mean, Dolo is traditional. She wants, I think, to feel like, understandably so, his marriage is over. It's in the past before she gets that commitment. She may well want that. I feel like she's probably told us that she wants the divorce to be done before she gets a ring. But what if that's not possible? Do we just go into an apologies to Dolores for making this comparison, like Gretchen and Slade situation, because they were never going to get married. He cannot marry her because of his extreme medical debt accumulated from not paying the bills for his child who had grave medical concerns. So they have been engaged for a number of years, but I don't think we'll ever get married because of his enormous financial debts. And so with Dolo, I don't think she would want to receive a proposal if she wasn't sure that the commitment would genuinely end in marriage. And maybe she just wants it to be like a simpler route. But it feels like he's giving her options. And he's also, as related to giving her options, saying like, I'm giving you this because I'm not giving you the other thing. I don't know if this is a game of bait and switch here. And I would hate to think that she's in that kind of dynamic. I mean, think of what happened with her and David. It was, you're getting this house essentially, but you're not getting the ring. That wasn't enough for Dolores. She didn't want to go down that path. She was like, I don't want to have this kind of life. And now she's moved in with Paul. They, for all intents and purposes, have a seemingly they're in a very serious relationship with each other. I think that they both want to be with each other. I just don't love the idea of her engaging in a different kind of relationship with him, one that's seemingly purely business, when this other relationship, the more important one, the romantic personal relationship, is kind of up in the air at this point. I don't know that he's being honest with her about why the divorce hasn't happened, but I feel relatively confident that he's not being honest with us, that there's like another piece here that's missing. And maybe the piece is, I don't want to get divorced. Maybe the piece is, me getting divorced requires such a financial commitment of signing those papers and dealing with like a maybe huge financial settlement. I just don't want to do it. I'm fine with things the way they are. And maybe Paul doesn't need to be married to feel committed to Dolo. But I'm much less concerned about Paul than I am Dolores. You know what I don't love at all? That vicious week before I start my period. I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I just don't feel like myself. I have crazy cravings, usually a week and a half before. I know when I want a little bit of extra sugar and some carbs that the hormones are happening. And for those who are going through menopause or perimenopause, that feeling of having a struggle to find comfort in your body, or being done with menopause but still feeling like a wet sock on a busy highway. Well, lucky for me, I can manage PMS with EstroControl. And for those dealing with menopause or perimenopause, there is Hormone Harmony. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. And a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony alone. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. If staying hydrated was an Olympic sport, I would get a gold medal every time. Now, AGs know that I take staying hydrated really seriously. I happen to have a health condition which requires a precise focus on hydration and electrolytes throughout the day. And especially with the summer heat in New York City in full swing, staying hydrated and having those electrolytes is more important than ever before. That's why I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV delivers better hydration than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients, including my beloved sodium. God bless. It is so easy to use. My favorite thing to do is chill a bottle of water, throw that in my bag, go for a light, lovely little stroll, and I enjoy a packet of Liquid IV in that water. So I can stay my best throughout the day. It's so easy. My personal favorite is lemon lime. I also love adding Liquid IV to some seltzer and have a little bit of a spritz when I'm back in my apartment. Liquid IV is also the hydration multiplier. It's perfect for before, during, and after workouts. And for me as a chronic walker, I love, love, love taking a stroll around New York. It's the perfect complement, and better to have some liquid IV, electrolytes, and hydration before you start to feel bad. I always have a couple sticks in my bag wherever I go. Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code ANDY at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today by using promo code ANDY at liquidiv.com. I love chickpeas so much that at one point, my former roommate, shout out Taryn, had a little bit of an intervention with me about my daily chickpea intake. I love it so much, but unfortunately, in the wild world of podcasting and just living in New York City, I don't have the time to give the chickpeas the love they deserve, which is why I love Cook Unity. Cook Unity is the first chef-to-you service delivering locally sourced meals from award-winning chefs right to your door every week, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. My friend of the Moroccan chickpea tagine with turmeric rice. It features my beloved chickpeas as the star of the show, and a big step up from my usual sauteed chickpeas with pepper and salt. There's no cooking required for a chef quality dining experience right at home when you use Cook Unity. My food arrives fresh, never frozen, in packaging that keeps meals fresh in the fridge for up to 7 days. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from, and the menu is updated constantly. I mean, I'm vegetarian, typically dairy-free, but I err on the side of vegan. There are tons of options to choose from. Go to cookunity.com/andysgirls or enter code andysgirls before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code andysgirls or going to cookunity.com/andysgirls today. I really like Paul. Like, I like them together. I think that they're fun together, but there's now this added tension and almost like sadness. I don't know if it's sadness that I'm bringing to this and watching it or something there that does exist that I'm seeing. Like, how much of the kind of oy vey of this is just my projection of what I'm watching versus them actually having some tension with each other on screen. It just feels like this is a weird area that they're in because Dolo has expressed to him, and then she's done some like troubleshooting with the rest of the cast, of what she wants and needs. And it just feels like he's unwilling to give it to her. So what do you do with that? Like, at a certain point, Dolo saying, I don't need it. We're fine together. But is she really? I don't know. She's been very clear before. These are questions that would they not be easy to answer on a, I don't know, reunion-ish episode where someone's just like asking questions? I don't know that I really need a lot of focus on what happens at this dinner or whatever, if the dinner is supposed to be symbolic of all of these people's relationships with each other. Let's take out a little bit less of the symbolism and just get to some of the kind of nitty gritty. I want Dolo to be happy. I want her to be settled. It just makes me kind of sad that now they're working together on an electrical company. It's not like working in electrical company stuff is Dolo's, you know, dream. It doesn't need to be. It could be a great way of her bringing in income, especially if people on these shows are not going to have that stream of, you know, many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars plus that they may have had until this point, or at least for a while as the network figures out what it wants to do next. So I'm not against her having a stream of income. I want her to be okay. I also just think for Dolo, a stream of income that's focused on her own independence when it's connected to Paul, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I don't love it. I know how I feel about it. How I feel about it is not great. I'm not really loving some of this. But there are also other aspects of the episode that I thought were really interesting. What is going on with Danielle and her father? I'm thankful that, and she seemed to be thankful that he was invited to her bougie kids party. Also, how much did that party cost? That was an expensive party. I was like, oh my God, Danielle, how did we invest this? Is some of this free? Because I hope so, because that looked pricey, just with a lot of stuff going on. Danielle cut off ties with her father because he felt like she was being too protective of her brother, right? That he wasn't seeing Danielle's side. He wasn't like fighting for Danielle. I think she felt like he was playing favorites with her brother. That I think is what we've been told. So the idea that, you know, Nate is doing his level best to kind of bridge the gap here, you know, they're making sure that the kids see grandpa, which I think is important and good. Nate's keeping a relationship with him, which I think is important and good. He's invited to this event, not technically, I think, through Danielle, but through Nate, important and good. He can't show up because he's under the weather. I really felt for Danielle in that moment. I thought this could be a step forward. But also, are there not other steps we could take? Like, is the reason that her dad is still cut off from her because she really genuinely needs a break? She feels like maybe her relationship with her family members is too intense. We saw her mom there and her stepdad there was really happy to see them at the Bougie Kids event. Is the reason that she hasn't moved forward with her dad because she's sort of expecting a different response? Like, is this one of those situations of, I don't feel like you're on my side, so I'm cutting off from you entirely with the hope that you will really fight for me now? Is that what we're hoping for? Because if you are in her dad's eyes, and your child is saying, I need a break from you entirely, I don't know that your instinct is going to be fighting harder to get their attention versus respecting their boundaries. So I'm kind of curious as for what it is that Danielle is looking for. If she's trying to heal that relationship, I mean, there is a thing called therapy here. Maybe this is what we're working toward. She's saying to herself, maybe it's not that I regret taking space from him. Maybe that was needed. Maybe she needed to take that time. And now she has made the decision to think to herself, you know what? I hope that there's a way for us to repair this. And maybe that's the direction that they'll be headed in. I don't know what's going on in Danielle's like interior family life. I feel like there's a lot there that we're missing with the stuff with the brother and the brother's wife, her sister-in-law, with her dad. It just feels like we're not getting enough here. I wish there were more scenes of Danielle talking to her mom about this versus a friend. I wish that there was someone who had more information and more of an understanding of the family dynamics, where it's not just Danielle sharing information and her side, but also someone who has their own perspective and their own kind of like stakes in the game. And I'm not that person who says, deal with toxic family members and keep them in your life forever. I've made that very clear on prior episodes that I think it's you do not need to stay in toxic plus, other ways to describe, you know, difficult relationships with family members, because they are your family. You have the right to decide who to maintain ties with. So it's not that I'm saying this should not happen. I'm saying I wish I had more information on it. And I wish there was a way to talk to Danielle. Maybe it's having her on Andy's Girls. I wish there was a way to talk to Danielle more about like the past history of what's occurred and how she's feeling in the present moment. Thank God that Nate continued his relationship with her dad. Thank God that Danielle seemed okay with it. Maybe she was in agreement about it. I think that's a really mature response, where it's not, well, because I'm having an issue relating to like my dynamic with my estranged sibling, everyone in my family needs to be cut off here. I think it's important that there are still continued ties. It's unfortunate when you think about, you know, the way that Joe was talking about his relationship with Teresa on the episode, when he is acting as the what was it? The minister? Oh, I'm so sorry. I know I'm using the wrong word. The person leading the ceremony. This is the Jew. I'm like, it wasn't the rabbi. It was somebody else. It was a, was it non-denominational? I think it was a non-denominational service. I really don't know which word. I think he was a life. What is that called? When you go to the, oh God, I know people are shouting this into their ears and out their mouths while listening to the, I think it's like a universal church, I think is how you sign up. Whatever it is, love it, fully support it. But the way, the point of what I'm trying to say is that, what is it? Universal life, universal, well, something universally in full support of anybody officiating a ceremony if they want to, and the people get married want them to, God bless, like, or state bless, or, you know, signing the papers bless. Very supportive of it. Anywho, with Joe, it made me kind of sad when he was leading the service. And I did think that he did a solid job. I was nervous for him at the beginning when the focus was like on my reaction to Melissa's cousin, my cousin, you know, coming out, where it was like about Joe's responses. And I'm thinking, shouldn't it be about these two people standing before you getting married? But I thought the way that he made it full circle, I think was good. I think it was a lovely speech, service, whatever, again, the proper etiquette is with words. I'm so sorry. But when he's talking about the fact that, like, he's in front of, you know, Melissa's family, they're united together, these two people who love each other, how sad it is that Melissa's cousin's fiance, now husband, didn't have his family there because they weren't in support, or they did not understand that their child, their family member is gay. I mean, that is wrenching. I grew up in a very progressive state. I mean, I think Rhode Island at one point was called the most liberal state in the country. I don't know if that's still true, or how you even figure that out. I guess it's like voting records or whatever. But you know, I grew up in a very progressive community in Rhode Island. I remember my mom, when I was a little kid, was like throwing it was a baby shower, bridal shower for her colleague, who's also a very, very, very good friend of hers, who's a lesbian. And so that, I never thought for a second about anything else other than, of course, marriage equality. And I am not someone who is a member of the queer community. So hearing stories from friends who have experienced ruptures and separations from their family members because they came out, or their family suspected that they were gay, is an experience that I really, truly, it's so hard for me to come to terms with that happening in 2024, because it feels so, I mean, it's wrong to me, regardless of any of it happening at any time, but also so outdated. So to hear of this man standing in front of his now husband pledging his love, and to think that his family members aren't attending because he's gay, it's so outside of my realm of experience. I'm not obviously denying the reality that that is the reality for many people. It's just so frustrating for me to consider that that is something that people feel, that still the homophobia that still exists is, it's just unbelievable to me and so upsetting. And to have to be in a position to maybe carry that baggage of, like, you know, the pressure on people when you're getting married of wanting to make sure that you are represented in attendees of people who are coming from different parts of your life, that you want to have family members there, potentially you want to have friends or colleagues, whomever else there, because it's almost like parts of your life are paying witness to this new life moving forward. And to see that taken away from him by family members who really, truly, to me, should absolutely go fuck themselves for not respecting this man's love in the next chapter of his life, I feel so much love and support that I hope he feels, and how the episode or that moment was received, because I thought it was a beautiful one, and one that is important for those of us who are not part of the gay community to just remember of how much homophobia and anti-gay sentiment continues to exist, and unfortunately, God forbid, thrive in some communities in this country and certainly the world. And when Joe was speaking about, you know, how important it was to be a part of Melissa's family and thinking of those moments where his kids aren't going to have members of his family there to pay witness. That really does kind of like fuck you up a little bit when I think about Antonia and Joey and other child whose name I just forgot, when they grow up, to think that they won't have their aunt and step uncle or whatever there, and the reverse, that when Gia, if and when, you know, these kids get married, if they choose to get married, that they won't have, you know, Joe and Melissa there. It does make me sad. It's also one of those things of like, yeah, that's not going to happen. This is what happens when you have these huge separations from your family. The people who really suffer in a lot of ways from this, I don't want to say the most, but in a lot of ways are the kids who are entirely innocent from this. These were decisions made by their parents that are going to affect their lives and their futures. And that's unfortunate, especially as Joe has said many times, as Teresa has said many times, that their family is very small. It's just incredibly unfortunate. And maybe there will be a world that exists. Maybe, I don't know that this is possible. I feel like it's not. Maybe if the show comes back in a way that does not include Teresa and Melissa, I feel like maybe them kind of resolving stuff, you couldn't have either of these people on the show for that to happen, because there's no way they wouldn't have interest in resolving anything if they had the show to fall back on. But maybe anything is possible. Maybe there will be a time in the future. Maybe one of their lives will be adjusted in some way that, you know, if there's a toxic energy here that's helping to hold up some of these estrangements, if that is no longer a thing or people change, right? Because they can do that all the time. Maybe there will be the opportunity for these people to repair the relationships. Maybe that shouldn't happen. But I'm going to hold out a little bit of hope that if it is a healthy idea and these people, God forbid, can actually move forward, they've been able to do it before. It's lasted a couple years, but maybe we can extend that a little bit more, where you can just be a part of each other's lives for the kids, if that's what these kids want. You know, Gia obviously is the oldest of all of the nieces and nephews and has spoken pretty definitively about her frustration toward her now estranged uncle and aunt. But that's possible that could, you know, maybe change at some point. And I also think, you know, the Judice kids are just, they've just been dealt a really tough hand. And I just kind of wonder how much of their staunch support of their mom is because it's their mom. They're going to support her. You know, you want to defend your beloved parent. And also, their dad isn't here. And I feel like some of this really vocal support of Teresa is also the kids feeling like they are maybe filling a little bit of that role, not to be Teresa's ex-husband, but to just say, there's a member of our family who's not legally allowed to be in this country. And so as a result, we've just maybe grown tighter and stronger and more unified together. And maybe that's just also, it's your mom. You don't want to criticize your mom, and you believe in her narrative around what happened. I understand it. I just wish there was maybe a little bit of an open door. But I guess of all of the things that I've said relating to New Jersey of recent, maybe that is probably maybe the most unrealistic. But I just wish for these kids that there was a way to have their family members present, where they are able to look out if and when they get married or another life event, because marriage isn't the ultimate goal for a lot of people, or it doesn't necessarily need to be the symbol of success as an adult. There are other ways of being successful. There are other forms of relationships that are equally important and valid. But if they decide to get married, you know, you want to have your loved ones around, you know, you potentially, if you consider them loved and loving. And I hope that maybe there's something in the future that will lead to, you know, not these people being close. I get it. I'm like relatively realistic, but just okay enough that you wave from the back of the room. You know what I'm saying? Where you're just able to be there because your focus is on keeping the cousin's relationship intact. And that's going to be so much harder to do as they grow older and the estrangement grows wider. So, you know, that's just my two shekels on what I hope for, what I kind of wish for. I don't know how realistic it is, again, but I hope for something. Meanwhile, shifting gears just a little bit, just for a hot second. Why is Laura still someone that's being discussed? The ways that we have circled back to this person who I think is a former friend of Marge, who I guess is part of the reason why Jen and Danielle started to fall out, because Jen and Danielle's hair person, but just for the day of her, I'm saying this out loud. I'm like, this is actually ridiculous. So Jen Aiden had been maybe conspiring with Lena, the person who did Danielle's hair for free, who was then allegedly thrown out of the VIP section at Danielle's charity event, which was not recorded for filming and historical posterity. She was thrown out because either Danielle was concerned about security, or if you're, you know, looking at Jen and Lena's version of events, Danielle was being a little extra of a bougie kid in that moment. So, and wanted to feel like an extra VIP. So I guess related to that and seeking revenge, they wanted, or just stirring up drama, they wanted to bring Laura to that party. That's why this is coming out now, because of Jen's upset toward Danielle. She's referencing Lena again and saying, you were against, or Danielle saying this, you were against bringing Laura to this event. Laura, this former friend of Marge, who alleges that Marge is the one who told her that Melissa cheated or wanted to spread those rumors. It's so convoluted as I say it out loud, this whole, like, but it also feels like it could have happened, of Janielle. Oh, that's a fun new, that's the new Bennifer of 2024, especially because the one that exists might be no longer. May its memory be a blessing, to be determined. I'm never giving up hope. Pray. that's what we should be praying for at this point in time. So sorry for snorting. That, so I guess, you know, Jen's doing Jen. Jen's Jenning out. I'm talking about this Jen from the block, the one who lives in Paramus by the highway, wanted to bring this person to fuck with Marge. And Danielle didn't want that to happen. And I guess as a result, Jen has realized she has no more use for Danielle because Danielle will not play that form of dirt. She won't play dirty as Jen so consistently does. I do believe that part of the reason why Jen and Danielle are no longer is not because of an invisible punch being thrown, but really because Jen realized that Danielle is not going to do for Jen what Jen does for Teresa, which is genuinely to stick your head so firmly up this woman's ass and then play as dirty as possible in the games that you can to, like, quote unquote, win for Teresa or for Jen and Teresa. I think that, like, winning for Teresa means winning for Teresa and Jen, and maybe winning for Jen is, again, winning for Teresa, but also just, like, seeking revenge against Teresa's enemies, who are also Jen's. It's not probably great for, like, the continued online conversation about, you know, Jen's hobbies on and off camera, that there's now a little bit of a spotlight on the use of Instagram creator accounts to spread narratives that Jen wants to spread. Because I actually do remember, I think maybe a lot of people do, when this happened during filming, when there was an altercation with Jen and Danielle, I thought it had been instigated by Danielle, because I think that was at that point the word on the street. So to see the cast spotlight the fact that, oh, eye roll, this is what Jen does, what she seemingly does well, of just trying to twist the narrative, which did, I think, engage with a lot of fans online, there are a lot of fans who do not in any way like look at content creator accounts and read the blogs or go to Reddit or Google Reddit or whatever is happening with Reddit and MySpace and Facebook Friendster stuff. And God bless them for it. It's a pure life. It's a life I wish I had. But for people who have maybe a tangential relationship with creator accounts or word on the street, you know, us and people and whomever else, and I'm just speaking of the content creators, us and, you know, us people and whatever else, as well as the media, tabloid, blogs, yada, yada. And let's not forget Daily Mail. That's the official friend of for craziness, that this is not probably surprising that to hear the narrative addressed again, but it was to me surprising to like see the actual episode itself and think, oh, so it wasn't just Danielle coming out swinging for no reason. There was maybe a little bit more of Jen Aiden dangling that carrot. And so where things kind of land here, I mean, we saw the trailer for next week. And I'm sorry, I laughed and rewatched it again. The trailer at the tail end of the episode, where there's some sort of a cocktail group event. Jackie's there, and mazel tov to her for that, for getting the invite. You know, she was thrilled. Where Danielle is leaving, and Jen Aiden is by the door, and Danielle just leans over and says, like, by the way, you look like shit. I'm sorry, that was so funny. So hard, because I think it was just the line delivery of it, of like, oh, P.S., go fuck yourself. Have a great day. You're always going to get me with that kind of stuff. Those kind of exits, I mean, that we know an Irish exit, that's an Italian exit. And as an Italian American, as a pizza bagel, I stan. I really do. That's one of those leave the cannoli or the gun or whatever that phrase is from The Godfather. Pick up the insult and say au revoir. I mean, ciao. You know what I'm saying? Arrivederci. It was really just kind of a magical, moment to watch. And goddamn, Jen is absolutely not being truthful about what happened. She's saying she's in defense mode. Babe, she was escalating like a motherfucker. I don't know. You can talk about, you know, Danielle being in her personal space, but that's what Jen wanted. That's what she was encouraging. She was saying these things in a way to provoke a response. Then she escalated it. Then she went for the neck. Like, there's no way around this. So do I think that Jen knows she's full of shit when she's saying things on this episode? Absolutely, I do. Do I think she also believes it? Probably. But that's what, you know, the best salesmen do, is you're trying to sell and spin. Like, Jen Aiden would be great for any political party after any presidential debate or event, because she would be in the spin room and she would be leading the class. Like, this woman knows how to spin. And I don't know how successful she is at it in this specific friend circle, because she has people who like hate her, but she's certainly successful with it, I think, in real time, or at least in staying on the show. It doesn't mean I support or agree with literally anything she has ever done on Housewives. To have seen that, I think she's been a solid housewife in being consistently sort of wild and vibrant and colorful and provocative, it does not mean that I have ever agreed with, I think, any decision that she's made, or I'll add a little gray area here, almost any decision that she's made, to say that, you know, I thank her for her service. Has her service ended? Yes, I think she was, you know, the first to make the call. I don't think she'll be the last, but I do think there is a reason you haven't seen her do any press or anything. She has to be there if they are filming something at Rails. You can't have Teresa by herself with Jen Fessler. She needs to be present. I'm sure she'll be at the heart of whatever the fuck it is that takes place. But is that going to be the only thing she does? Maybe they let her, or at a certain point, they don't have control over what she chooses to do. After that point, I assume we'll see more of her, or maybe not. Maybe she's like, I don't really feel like promoting this if I don't have a role in it. Or maybe I feel like I have a little bit of a vendetta. I know summer is upon us when I get just the instinctive need and desire for a veggie dog and a veggie burger. And maybe putting on my sunglasses, which I also happen to wear at night during wintertime as well. And for those delicious summer grilling meals and outdoor entertaining, bread and buns are essential when you're serving up those burgers, hot dogs, sandwiches, and more. That's where Hero Bread steps in. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Hero Bread fits perfectly into so many different lifestyles and health goals. Getting enough fiber, cutting down on sugar, adding more protein, Hero is here to save the day. Hero Bread has all your favorites with no consequences or compromises. 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and high in fiber. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji Water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. Now, you guys know I love a solo trip to Paris, but there have been a couple instances while on vacay at my home away from home where I'm walking through an arrondissement and the directions that I'm given are not great. I have found myself multiple times late at night on these kind of side streets, which sure might get me back to my hotel a little quicker than not, but don't make me, a single woman, comfortable, especially when traveling alone. That's why I love Life 360. It gives me peace of mind and also my mom, who knows when I'm on vacation that I'm okay. She can check in as she does daily, but also by checking Life 360, she's able to see where I am and when. There are times where I miss a text or a call, and that's not just when I'm on vacation. It's obviously also when I'm back home. Life 360 works to bring that necessary peace of mind. And there are ways to customize according to your lifestyle. Life 360 has phone finding features called tiles. You can use them to find a lost item. That gives me a lot of comfort, especially because I'm someone who constantly misplaces things, including my keys. Life 360 is a lifeline during emergencies, especially with free crash detection, which sends you an alert if someone in your circle is in an accident. It has your family's back when they're on the road with things like crash detection, emergency dispatch, road assistance, driver report cards. You can track your stuff with tiles, stay connected with loved ones without constantly bugging them, and make everyday family life better. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code AndySCrolls to get 1 month off of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com. Use code AndySCrolls. And speaking of vendettas or whatever, what the fuck is going on with Jen Fessler? I am so confused by it. I'm sort of bewildered and befuddled. I understood what her reasoning was at the Bougie Kids party and saying and attempting to tell Teresa and Gia it's an analogy. But this is also another question. Are you doing this for them? Are you doing it to try to speak on behalf of Rachel, who you're not having like a solid relationship with this at this point? You guys do seem estranged from each other, and you definitely aren't in real life, because on the after show, Rachel says they haven't spoken in 5 months. So what are we doing this? Are we doing this for the history books? Are we doing this because you know what they're saying is inaccurate? Are you doing this because you genuinely believe they're open to listen? I think anytime you use the word analogy, it's not going to go terribly well in New Jersey, because you kind of lose them at the word. And maybe that's just bringing up too much with Jackie and the Coke analogy stuff. I do understand Gia saying, like, just don't mention me at all. She does not want to be utilized as a form of like weaponry, especially in arguments that do include her mom. Does Teresa mention Gia? Yeah, it's her kid. Is Teresa open to understanding that her reaction here might not, it's so focused on thinking that John Fuda had a nefarious intention in bringing up Gia, that he was trying to say she was involved in something. And because, again, this deals with like questions of John Fuda, whether or not he was like allegedly a drug dealer or something. And then we're using the word analogy. And then we're thinking of what Jackie said, which was pulling out of her ass because it's an analogy. What if Gia did coke, which everybody understands did not happen because it was an analogy. You're just using Gia's name. You're making a comparison. It's something that's happening against Teresa, and you're using the word drugs. And do I understand John Fuda saying it? Yeah, I do. I do understand him being like, you're accusing me of doing something. At that point, I was younger than your oldest kid. So have a little bit of an understanding, I guess, of who I was, that I was a child that you're talking about as an adult, and put that, like, have an understanding of here of what it is that you're saying. But do you think Teresa really cares? No, of course she doesn't. If you agree with like the word on the street, and I've used word on the street 16 times this episode, so you're welcome in advance. If you believe word on the street, she doesn't give a shit about whether or not the rumor had to do with him being younger, him being an adult. She's muddying the waters. She wants people to not like him. She wants his rep to be that this man maybe did illegal stuff, and that's what she's using against him. She would know best. You know what I'm saying? Like, felon to felon, or accusation to accusation. I guess, you know, what works for the goose works for the gander. So let's bring up some bad stuff that we did because I'm mad. You know, that seems to be her prerogative, and she can do it, but there's going to be a pushback to it. And then it just becomes this thing of like John stooping too low because he's bringing up Gia. And I get that. I think Gia has made abundantly clear that she doesn't want to be mentioned in that context. And I think people should respect it. I do. But also, we are also, I'm saying that I think exists regardless. And also on top of it, Teresa doesn't give a single fuck of whether or not this information is valid. Because if you believe, say it with me now, word on the street, she was maybe conspiring to get this stuff into the blogs, into the universe, which is usually what they mean by like a Twitter or Instagram account, so that they can talk about it on the show. Does that sound like somebody who really cares about, you know, the age in which he was maybe arrested for doing some shit? No, it just means she wants to say this because it makes him look bad. And maybe if he looks bad, then his opinion of her husband will become a little less maybe understandable, or rather valid. If you were saying that this person is not a solid witness, then you can try to tear apart his defense as much as possible. I mean, ask Jim Leonard. I'm sure he would share his thoughts on this, because he never has until this point. I don't know what to tell you. It's tough. It's tough to watch. It's kind of interesting. I'm not against this episode. Actually, in talking about it out loud, it wasn't as strong to me as the altercation episode, which I just thought was really loaded. But there's still a lot of stuff to navigate. I didn't even bring up 10%. No, I did. I brought up like 35, I think, of what was going on in this episode. Two points I do want to point out. One, I really appreciated Rachel talking about her experiences with juvenile arthritis, having that event, talking to, I think it was all young women, talking to teenagers so that they feel comfortable and can normalize being in a group with other people who understand their experience is important, and celebrate it. God bless. Great to see. And also important to hear someone say, like, some of this other stuff is bullshit. Even though we love these universes where things that we might consider IRL to be bullshit, to be like of the highest possible importance, because that is just this specific insular universe of Real Housewives, that's where escapism comes in, of like, we get it. Like, these things don't necessarily matter IRL, but they really do matter in this little bubble. So let's continue. Let's like not fully pop. I appreciate that we can kind of carry multitudes and different realities. One of which is Rachel saying, I have this health issue, and I want to talk more about it and normalize that conversation. I just thought, you know, credit to you. And I do also want to say that my gut instinct in watching the scene in Marge's future closet of watching her and Joe get that call from the doctor, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I thought, ooh, this is too much for me. And again, is this projection? Is this something else? I actually thought, a part of me was like, ooh, I wish they didn't film this point. I wish we could get a scene right after of them talking about it. It felt too real. So, you know, we want reality, right? We want to see these moments of vulnerability. But that moment to me was too much. I was like, oh my God, what are we watching taking place? Because I thought what we were going to watch, I don't know why, I just kind of thought we were going to watch them talk to a doctor about a test result, and the test result was like, everything's fine, and on to the next. And to hear someone say, we want an MRI, okay, let me talk to the doctor, and the doctor saying, we saw something, we want to check it out, we want to treat it. I mean, that is something that is important to watch, and that's a call that a lot of people get of, we do have questions or possible concern. We do need to get some stuff checked out. So let's do it, and we'll handle it. We'll handle whatever happens next. I just, in that moment, I was like, ooh, like my heart was kind of, my heart was caught in my throat of, I am getting a throat study on Exhale next month, but it was just, or actually esophagus. Shout out to Sutton Strack. Never before in my personal medical, that's actually not true, because I did connect a lot with Yolanda in the invisible illness era. But I have had so many conversations with doctors in the last week about my esophagus. So I just want to shout out Sutton Strack's last, that was a tough season of Beverly Hills when it came to all things esophagate. But that actually helped me quite a bit. And it's very hard for me, and I have talked about Housewives with other doctors, medical professionals, to not reference Sutton's esophagus in setting up this like swallow study. Even though, as I have said multiple times, I don't know that it's a swallowing issue as much as I forget to chew when I choke on veggie tacos and also watermelon and other things. But I do think about it. So who says that housewives can't help inform specific details relating to medical histories? Because when they ask me for mine, it's hard for me not to be like, but do you know Sunstruck? Because she's that stuff, and I know about her choking on a sandwich off camera because it was on the Beverly Hills After Show when they were talking about it. Anyway, circling back, with Marge and Joe, that is a reality that a lot of people have, that a lot of people are dealing with, and there is something really important about watching that conversation take place. It was just my guttural spiritual defense mechanism of like, oh my God, this feels so personal and so intense, and it's going in a direction I didn't anticipate. And so maybe that's like some regret on my part of like, it's going to be okay, right? Because it needs to be okay, versus they need to get more info. And that happens. Sometimes you have some of these tests, and that's obviously where a lot of fear and concern comes in of like, what happens? How do I handle it if I don't get the result that I assume I will get or that I really, really hope for? And also there's a camera crew there. And so, you know, you also got to watch this moment of Joe and Marge just kind of like holding each other and dealing with it. And Joe wanting to support his wife because she's obviously losing her shit, as I think anybody would be at that point, at that moment and at that point. So it was one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, this is really tough. It felt really intense. I don't know if I'm the only person that felt that way. I'm glad it was on the episode because it's something that needs to be discussed. And we have seen, you know, these kinds of conversations happen on Housewives. We saw it with Jesse on Summer House. And that's, you know, with Jesse, I was like, oh my God, I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay. And the way that ended with the to be continued, I'm like, can we not have, you know, getting news about cancer be a to be continued plot point on a Bravo show? It just does not feel right in my heart. But sometimes the to be continued is what happens in life. You know, it's just, it's the getting the answer that wasn't the one that you were assuming or hoping for. So what happens next? This is the reality. This is the reality for a lot of people. And it feels almost, I mean, speaking of what Rachel was saying with like, this stuff isn't real. And then talking about, meaning the drama isn't real, but there are real things that are happening with people that need to be discussed. This is the other side of that. This is echoing her remarks of like, no, there's like real shit that's going on. And how much does that influence PS, like Marge losing her shit at other moments? Maybe she would be regardless. You know, there's that whole other conversation of like mama bear and you feel like your kids are under attack. But also the stress of kind of dealing with this. I don't know when she got that call in relation to some of her other scenes. And I'm not using that as like an excuse overall for her behavior on or off camera, but just saying when you carry that, the baggage of it, emotional and otherwise, it's just a lot to bear. And sometimes it comes out in ways that can be a little extra tough. So I do want to shout out both of them because I appreciate, I know that that's a lot to share and really, really personal. And it was poignant to me. It was like really, oh man, if you had seen my physical reaction to that, I was like, oh my God, it was just really, really, to me, it was really, really tough to watch. But I appreciate the fact that they shared it with us. I really do. And I hope that he is okay. And whatever we see that happens next, hopefully they're both able to manage it and just kind of move through this together. Listen, as mentioned earlier, and I am going to be totally, this is probably the part where I cry a little bit, so I apologize. You are more than welcome to stop listening because it's just about my personal life, okay? It's just about a really terrible thing that happened on July 4th for my family, that today, Independence Day, a day in which a lot of people, oh God, I am going to fucking cry. I'm so sorry. A lot of people celebrate and, you know, have the barbecues and the pool parties. It's also a terrible day for my family. 26 years ago. Oh, fuck me. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to have some sodium water. 1 second. All right. Need that salt coursing through my veins. Bring up that blood pressure. Bring me back to life. 26 years ago, my brother dove into the shallow end of a swimming pool at a close friend's July 4th Independence Day party. And the reality and irony of what took place is that my brother, a healthy, strong, athletic high school teenager, was rendered a high-level quadriplegic, C1, C2. It's the same, essentially the same level of injury as Christopher Reeve. My dad wrote a book about the ensuing 10 days after the accident that actually at one point Chris Reeve was signed on to direct a film adaptation of. And the book is called Rescuing Jeffrey. I think you can get it on Amazon at this point. It's a great, upsetting, a well-written, deep, poignant tale of kind of what my family experienced. A microcosm of, unfortunately, what has happened to many families as a result of diving accidents. Diving is the leading cause of spinal cord injuries, accounting for words are fun. It's one of the most preventable causes of spinal cord injuries. And according to the National Spinal Cord Injury Statistical Center, diving is the fifth leading cause of spinal cord injury for folks in our country. The injuries can occur in any body of water, including lakes, rivers, creeks. Who goes in a creek? Apologies to creeks. Swimming holes and swimming pools. They're most often located in the cervical spine. Shout out to my brother, Jeff. Particularly in the fifth and sixth vertebrae. The severity of the disability depends on the level of the spinal cord that's damaged.
Most injuries are cervical, vertebral fractures, and dislocations. As my brother is, you do not want to have a cervical spinal cord injury that's like at the top of the head. If a gal can dream about the kind of spinal cord injury, lower is better. And there are a lot of risk factors for diving-related spinal cord injuries, which include age. Most patients are between 18 and 29 years old. My brother was 17. Gender, 85% of patients are male. Alcohol consumption, drinking alcohol before diving, is a significant risk factor. And to help prevent diving-related spinal cord injuries, the number one way, the only safe dive, is the one you never take. I have had awkward conversations with friends on social who have tried to assure me that when they're posting videos or photos of them diving into a pool or a lake or a river, or I don't know anybody who knows a creek, but shout out once again, normalize conversations involving creeks. We want to make sure that creeks are heard and valued. That, you know, I get the response back of like, we're fine. I'm fine. It was fun. It's really genuinely never a good idea. Except, I guess, if you're on like the diving team for the Olympics. So except for those dozen or so people, I would strongly recommend never diving. It's one of the difficult parts for me of watching Summer House, because I swear to God, in every goddamn episode, there's at least five instances of people diving into that pool, and it gives me so much stress. Again, the only safe dive is the one you never take. And I'm speaking specifically to anyone listening, but especially to parents. When you're taking your child, or if you, to me, God forbid, own a pool. But if you are taking your child to a pool party or a slumber party or any residence or place that involves a pool, make sure you are communicating to your child not to dive. There are pools where there might not be a sign that's saying how deep the pool is. My brother, you know, I was there in the pool. I remember. Oof, God, I need more sodium for a second. I remember him thinking, he was like calculating in his head, is this safe to dive in? But you're not thinking, you know, 26 years ago that the possibility of being paralyzed as a result of making the decision is a possibility that exists. Kids are fearless. People are fearless. We don't expect the worst possible decision, the worst possible effect to really genuinely take place, which is where we need someone to tell us not to do the thing. Nobody wants to feel like they're going to have less fun, but I can guarantee you that taking that dive is so much, that not taking the dive is so much more fun than taking the dive and God forbid, breaking your neck. It is the moment where kids and people do not want to hear no, where they must be told no. So there are ways to help prevent diving-related spinal cord injuries. You can enter the water feet first. Avoid diving into shallow water. Check the water depth and look for obstacles before diving. Don't dive in water that's less than 12 feet deep. Enter slowly if you're unsure of the water depth. Avoid murky water. Don't dive headfirst into unknown water. Don't dive toward the bottom into oncoming waves. Don't jump or dive from cliffs, piers, jetties, or bridges. I've had the unfortunate luck of getting messages and friends from calls who have had family members, after knowing about my family's experience, you know, they get a call from a family member or loved one, there's been an accident and it's involved diving into water and unfortunately getting the worst possible news as a result. I've had friends that I've met through the paralysis community who were rendered paralyzed after a diving related accident. The question should not be, why did that person maybe dive into the shallow end of a pool or dive and not know the depth? The question really should be, how can we avoid this happening again? And people just don't think it's going to happen to you. We all carry that. We all carry that kind of armor of, I'm going to make this decision because I'm not going to be the statistic, because that either doesn't really happen or it's not going to happen to me. I can guarantee that you live the rest of your life and not have to go through, oh God, fucking sodium, three times a charm. and not go through what my family has experienced, you should be so lucky to say it's not going to happen to me and it won't. Hopefully it won't. The best way to ensure that that doesn't happen is to not dive. And again, for the 45th time, and just to say it with me one more time, the only safe dive is the one you never take. It's not about not diving into a pool. It's about that, obviously, but also about not diving into a body of water, not diving into an ocean. I don't care how deep it looks, because the dive itself can fuck you up regardless of depth. So just want to, you know, once again, say happy 4th of July. You know what I'm saying? This country, well, we're going through right now. How could you not celebrate? While you're having your hot dogs, God bless. Also, sidebar, if anybody has recommendations, I'm looking to, I've been a vegetarian for 150 years. I really need some recommendations for updated vegan gluten-free hot dogs. So if the takeaway that you get from this conversation is don't dive into a body of water and DM Sarah on Instagram with your veggie dog recommendations, both of those things carry a lot of value. While you're at your barbecues, while you're on vacation, while you're international AG laughing your ass off at those of us in America, just doing our best to get through the next couple months and whatever else happens, just please carry with you the fact that, you know, July 4th for a lot of people is a day to celebrate independence. For my family, it's the exact opposite. It's truly the worst day of the year. And, you know, we don't want it's to have a loved one or to be the person with a spinal cord injury. It's a club that I truly wish no one else ever joins. If, you know, my worst enemy, and I can think of a couple housewives I really genuinely don't love, I really hope that no family ever on earth ever has to go through what we've gone through. And it's really fucking tough. So happy July 4th. Have those hot dogs. But, you know, once again, send me vegan recommendations. And please, 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 if there's one takeaway, it's now a good time to talk about the Patreon. If there's one takeaway from listening to this pod, the number one way that you could, you know, show your thanks for these bajillions of hours of free content. Should I monologue about that? No, I won't. Just kidding. Is to, you know, message me and say, you know, I told my kid not to dive. That's the best thing that you could ever say to me. It fills me with so much joy to get those messages. We got through it. Can I just sidebar and say that people sent me a lot of negative feedback when I talked about this accident last year, because they said this is a housewives podcast. It's also a podcast about my life. And sometimes I cry. That's the thing about psychology, is that we can carry layers and talk about things that are important to us. And sometimes we can cry about them. And then we can also talk about, you know, what's going on with Teresa and March. You know what I'm saying? We can do many things at one time. And sometimes when it comes to New Jersey, we want to cry. And sometimes we do. And that's just where we find ourselves. So listen, thanks so much for getting through it. If you've come to the tail end, please don't dive. Join the Patreon. The number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more. What else? Follow me on Instagram and allegedly threads at Dame Galley. Absolutely just forgot my handle, content creator of the year. And send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things New Jersey. Oh my God, upcoming season of Orange County. Please, Lord, give me the strength to get through season 15 in the next 7 days. I will do it. I will. That is my prayer. Oh, dear Lord. And I will do it. I will make it happen. So some of those Orange County deep dive episodes are coming up out of the cooker in the next couple days. And there's a 2-part Satchel Spectacular on the Patreon now, talking a lot about Summer House, New Jersey, future of Housewives. I think I talk a little bit about maybe going to Watch What Happens. I was in the audience for the 15th anniversary spectacular. It was a lot of fun, and I should talk about that on an upcoming episode, which I will do. Probably, hopefully, possibly, maybe definitely. Let me know if you want that
conversation
to take place. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Love all of you, or at least 90%. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.